I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, On the Money. President-elect Donald Trump speaks with reporters just days before taking office. We have the latest. Legislative agenda. How lawmakers on Capitol Hill are preparing for the second Trump White House and the legislation they'll prioritize. A lot to discuss. Mark Zuckerberg announces major changes to fact-checking and free speech on Instagram and Facebook. We have analysis. Plus, open door policy. A report from Rome on the ceremonial start to the 2025 Jubilee year that has already brought hundreds of thousands of pilgrims to the Eternal City. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks for being with us. Our top story tonight, President-elect Donald Trump moves back into the Oval Office in just 13 days, holds a wide-ranging news conference at Mar-a-Lago in Florida on a variety of national and international topics, including the hostages still being held by Hamas. And he issues a stern warning to the terrorists still holding those hostages in captivity for well over a year now. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Donald Trump also said at his news conference today, this is going to be a golden age for America and a golden age of common sense. He blasted President Joe Biden over a move he just made involving drilling for oil and brought up Greenland. But first, here's what he said concerning the hostages.
President-elect Donald Trump issues an ultimatum to Hamas.
If those hostages aren't back, I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all hell will break out in the Middle East. And it will not be good for Hamas, and it will not be good, frankly, for anyone. All hell will break out.
Trump issued the threat while standing alongside his incoming special envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, who is headed to Qatar for talks aimed at a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of the remaining hostages.
I don't know anyone who delegates better than President Trump. He gives us a lot of authority to speak on his behalf, and he exhorts us to speak emphatically. And emphatically means you better do this.
Talking energy, President-elect Trump slammed the current president, Joe Biden, who yesterday announced he's taking action to protect the East and West Coast, the Eastern Gulf of Mexico, and Alaska's northern Bering Sea from oil and natural gas drilling and the harm it can cause.
President Biden's actions yesterday on offshore drilling, banning offshore drilling, will not stand. I will reverse it immediately. It'll be done immediately. And we will drill, baby, drill.
President-elect Trump also discussed Greenland, where his son Donald Trump Jr. visited today.
People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security. That's for the free world. I'm talking about protecting the free world.
Trump also says he won't rule out the use of military force to seize control of Greenland and the Panama Canal, where he says the U.S. is getting ripped off. And also, could a name change be on the way for the Gulf of Mexico?
We're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, which has a beautiful ring that covers a lot of territory. The Gulf of America, what a beautiful name.
Separately tonight, a federal judge in Florida has temporarily blocked the release of Special Counsel Jack Smith's report on investigations into Donald Trump, who says it would be a fake report anyway. Also, President-elect Trump was denied today in his second attempt to delay this week's sentencing in his hush money case. Tracy?
All right. Thank you so much for that, Owen. Well, Washington's new archbishop says that he will be watching the Trump administration closely, especially when it comes to immigration. Cardinal Robert McElroy was named the new archbishop yesterday. In an online press conference, he wished the Trump administration well, but had concerns over its stance on immigration, saying in part plans which have been talked about at some levels of having a wider, indiscriminate, massive deportation across the country will be something that would be incompatible with Catholic doctrine. So we'll have to see what emerges in the administration. With the inauguration just 2 weeks away, the Republican-controlled House is zeroing in on its legislative agenda. Top GOP members are split over how the process should play out. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story. Eric?
Good evening, Tracy. Republicans are still trying to decide on how to pass President-elect Donald Trump's agenda, and it's causing for major debate. Some want a massive bill with all of Trump's priorities, while others want a two-bill approach. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise says that a final decision will be made next month.
So how long do you have to decide whether it's one bill or two bill?
Once we get into February, we're going to be bringing a budget resolution to the floor. And it's going to lay out all the things that are going to be in that bill.
Congressional Republicans also move forward to address illegal immigration today.
The tragic and preventable murder of Laken Riley serves as a stark reminder of the consequences of failed leadership.
The U.S. House passed the Laken Riley Act, which requires the detention of undocumented migrants charged with theft or burglary. The border is top of mind for several lawmakers. Freshman Congressman Addison McDowell says his younger brother Luke died from fentanyl poisoning, likely brought into the country illegally.
Every day that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and the Democrats in Congress refuse to act, more people will die.
The new legislation, named after a nursing student who was murdered by an undocumented immigrant, also grants power to attorneys general to sue the federal government if they can show their states are being harmed through failure to enforce national immigration policies. Democrats say these bills only satisfy the GOP base.
This is all, bills that were part of Mike Johnson cutting a deal to be speaker. These Republican members went to him, wanted these bills considered, many of them without being marked up, without going through the normal process.
Also on the Hill, Trump's pick for National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard visited with Senator Tommy Tuberville.
It's a good time to know that we're going to have people that's actually going to be for the United States of America and the citizens of America.
My background on the Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committees in Congress over 8 years, service in the military now for over 22 years, gives me a lot of the insight necessary to be able to go in and understand the serious threats we face and the essential function of our intelligence community.
The Senate is expected to take up the bill for the first time on Friday. It would require at least 60 votes to pass, which would mean at least 8 Democratic senators would have to vote for it. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
In the journey to his final resting place, late President Jimmy Carter is in the nation's capital for one last visit. The Carter family and the former president arrived at Joint Base Andrews earlier this afternoon. Carter's flag-draped casket was carried to the Capitol by a horse-drawn wagon. The 39th president will lie in state until his funeral on Thursday. Carter died on December 29th. At the age of 100. Well, another round of bitter cold is headed to the United States. This time, it is targeting the southern U.S. It comes just after a deadly storm blasted a huge part of the country with ice, snow, and wind. One expert says the cold conditions are not likely to end anytime soon.
And we're just getting a lot of cold Canadian and Arctic air that's being just channeled from north to south. The weather pattern is such where that's just a persistent flow of air from the northwest to the southeast, and we're really just dragging that Arctic air southward for an extended period of time.
Experts say the frigid air that normally stays trapped in the Arctic has escaped. Temperatures are not expected to set any records, but over the next several days, it will remain plenty cold. In Tibet, rescue operations are underway after a deadly earthquake struck the region earlier today. At least 126 people are dead and nearly 200 others injured. Thousands of homes were damaged. The 7.1 magnitude quake was followed by more than 100 aftershocks. Tremors were felt across the Himalayas in neighboring Nepal, Bhutan, and parts of northern India. Well, some big changes are coming to Facebook and Instagram's fact-checking. CEO Mark Zuckerberg says that they will use the model made popular by the social media giant formerly known as Twitter.
First, we're going to get rid of fact-checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X, starting in the U.S. We tried in good faith to address those concerns without becoming the arbiters of truth. But the fact-checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the U.S.
The company also plans to allow more speech by lifting some restrictions on topics considered to be part of the mainstream. Zuckerberg acknowledged that the changes are partially due to Donald Trump's election victory, which he categorized as, quote, a cultural tipping point toward once again prioritizing speech. And joining us now to discuss this is Daniel Cochran from the Heritage Foundation. Daniel, great to be with you today. In his announcement, Zuckerberg said that the fact checkers have been too politically biased and eroded trust. In what ways has there been bias before?
We saw it over and over again, especially during COVID-19. You know, Facebook and other big tech companies colluded with the U.S. government to censor skeptics of draconian lockdowns and the efficacy of vaccines. And part of that were the independent fact-checking organizations who were labeling the ideas like the theory that COVID originated in Wuhan, China as misinformation. A lot of these fact checkers were behind the censorship of Facebook and other big tech platforms. So I think this is a step in the right direction, but again, the devil's in the details.
Yeah, and Meta will now use the user-generated community notes. Tell us exactly how will that work?
Well, that's why I say devil's in the details. Mark Zuckerberg didn't provide a lot of specificity as to what that would look like. And I do think that the announcement, his timing for the announcement is kind of obviously to placate President Trump and incoming Republicans and avoid scrutiny for the fact that his company has had a really terrible track record of censoring Americans for the last 4 years. So now that President Trump is coming into office, Mark Zuckerberg is changing his tune, but he's done this before. In 2019, he said he was going to stand up for free speech. The next year, his company censored the Hunter Biden laptop story. In 2022, right as Republicans were poised to retake Congress, he went on Joe Rogan's podcast and said, yeah, we did do some stuff around COVID that I kind of regret. Didn't really say a whole lot until this last August. And then he said to the House Judiciary Committee, yeah, we did collude with the government. And I regret that. So I think, again, the shape-shifting and the timing of this politicized announcement, I think, is questionable. And we should remain skeptical until we have laws in the books to protect Americans from the overreach of these platforms.
Yeah. And Daniel, how do you think this could potentially affect, say, pro-lifers?
Well, I think it's hard to tell. I think some of these companies, you know, for the short term, they're probably going to be on better behavior because they know they're being watched and scrutinized. But the problem is that we saw during President Trump's last term that in fact these companies went into overdrive to censor American views. We're seeing this with Google now. Google's promoting stories that are damaging to President Trump's nominees. It's notorious for downranking conservative news content. And there's really no reason to believe, I think, in the long term that the companies have really changed. It's more that they've restructured they've changed their messaging and they've made some kind of top level cosmetic changes to make it look like they care about free speech, but they're still the same powerful platforms, and we need Congress and the next administration to hold them accountable.
I'm going to leave it right there. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on, for your insights. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I have a lot more so to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including taking on the state of Maine, why a Catholic family is challenging the state's human rights law, and a new poll examines how parents feel about public education in America. France solemnly gathered today to mark 10 years since the deadly Charlie Hebdo newspaper terrorist attack. French President Emmanuel Macron led tributes at the site of the attack where 12 people were killed by Islamic extremist gunmen. Macron joined officers and leaders laying wreaths at the former headquarters of the newspaper. The attack led to discussions on terrorism as well as free speech that still resonate in France to this day. Well, staying in France, Jean-Marie Le Pen, who co-founded France's conservative National Front, has passed away at the age of 96. Le Pen was a polarizing figure in French politics, known for his stances against immigration and multiculturalism. He was a practicing Catholic and the father of prominent French politician Marine Le Pen. The Biden administration says that it will prevent unpaid medical bills from appearing on people's credit reports. The new provision is set to impact 15 million Americans who have around $49 billion in medical debt. The change is predicted to raise credit scores by an average of 20 points and could potentially lead to more than 20,000 mortgages being approved every year. The White House says that medical debt is a poor predictor of an individual's ability to repay a loan. A fight over religious education in Maine is back in the courts today. A federal appeals court heard arguments in the case of St. Dominic Academy versus Macon. The case centers around Maine's state law that excludes religious schools from its tuition assistance program. In 2022, the Supreme Court overturned the ban, but Maine changed its state law in a way that still excludes religious schools. And now the Beckett Fund is fighting against it once again in the state. Well, a new poll out this week is giving us insight into how parents feel about public education in the U.S. It was released by the group Parents Defending Education. Some of the key findings include the following. 52% of parents say they support reducing the size and influence of the U.S. Department of Education. 77% believe the state should have more flexibility on how to run their school districts. Meanwhile, 75% of parents and 72% of Catholic parents oppose school faculty and staff from withholding information about a child's gender identity from parents. And a majority also oppose biological males who identify as females from using female bathrooms and locker rooms. And joining us now to talk more about all this is Michelle Exner, a senior advisor for Parents Defending Education. Michelle, great to be with you today. Before we get more into the numbers, tell us why this poll was conducted in the first place and what it reveals overall.
Absolutely. So it's a new year, right? It's been a few years since our organization had conducted a poll. And so we want to get a sense of where parents were at, right? What's the sentiment? What are the big issues that they care about? And of course, we started out with the key issues that we were seeing, either through speaking directly with our parents in our network, or just seeing what's happening in the news cycle and looking at the things that we're finding ourselves through public records requests. So we looked at things, just as you mentioned, at how gender and race ideology, what parents believe of that being injected into schools. We also saw at what parents, how parents think anti-Semitism has been handled in classrooms, and also, males in female sports and spaces. That's been a huge issue that's dominated headlines. And I know that as a parent, I know that it's an issue that parents care about deeply.
Oh, absolutely. And what else stuck out to you from the findings?
Absolutely. And so one of the big things that we always talk about in our organization is the emphasis that schools should be spending every single hour of the day on core academics, right? I'm talking about math, reading, science, and history. And unfortunately, what we've found over the course of the past couple of years is that that's not been happening, right? Schools are getting away from the fundamentals and focusing on frivolous things that shouldn't matter, mostly the gender and race ideology that they're injecting in schools. That's really just creating division and hate in classrooms. And at the end of the day, is not helping children meet their academic goals. And so one of the numbers here, we found that 90% of parents agree that focusing on core subject areas such as math, reading, science, and social studies would improve the quality of education. And this was a number that transcends political lines, right? This was similar numbers across Republican, Democrat, and independent voters, and also Catholic voters, right? Believe also 90% that schools should be focusing on these core issues if they want to successfully help children achieve an education.
Yeah, that is so very important. There were a number of questions asked in the polls, including whether parents think that school districts should be required to disclose when they accept money from foreign governments. That said, I think some parents, including myself, are a little bit surprised to learn that their children's school is getting money from another country. What more can you tell us about that, Michelle, and how common is that?
Absolutely, right? I think if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I would have thought, no, of course, it's coming from federal or state dollars, right? Our tax dollars that are funding these schools. Well, no, actually, last spring, we published a report from a high school in Fairfax County that showed that high school had gotten at least $1 million from the Chinese Communist Party. And so that kind of struck, if that's happening in this one high school, where else is it happening? And so we found that there were about $18 million that had come from the Chinese government that had funneled into schools across America, up to 140 school districts about. And so a huge deal, right? Because China is an adversary of the United States. This is no secret. There is no incentive for them to help American students. And so at the end of the day, this is just another, it could be seen as another tactic for them to gain influence of the American populace, right? Whether that's intellectual property, right? Intellectual information. So just to give you an example, the high school right here in Fairfax County, they handed over lesson plans, student projects, and information from the school, right? And this was one of the top high schools in America at the time. And just to give you an extent of how bad it was, China actually now has 20 Thomas schools that were essentially copied from our model. That shouldn't be happening. And so that's why we wanted to ask the specific questions. We wanted to find out how parents feel about it. And again, no surprise that parents are concerned about it. They don't believe that our schools should be getting and receiving foreign funding.
No, not at all. Michelle, thank you so much for talking to us about all this. We appreciate it. It's really eye-opening.
Thanks so much, Tracy.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, listen to this. One of the top podcasts in the world is all about the Rosary. Plus, there's no knocking this grand opening. It has already brought hundreds of thousands of pilgrims to Rome. We'll explain. Friar hoped his new faith-based podcast would be a success, and you could almost say it was a Hail Mary. For several days in 2025, Father Mark Mary Ames had the number one Apple podcast in the world with the Rosary in a Year from Ascension Press. After three consecutive days in the top spot, unfortunately, it recently fell to number three. Still, it has received more than 2,500 reviews and is given 4 to 9 stars out of 5. Father Mark Mary tells Fox News that the podcast is not his. It actually belongs to God. Finally tonight, more than 500,000 pilgrims have already passed through the holy doors of St. Peter's Basilica in the 2 weeks since the 2025 Jubilee began. Across the city, faithful are also able to cross the threshold of three other holy doors in some of the most important churches of Christendom. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigan has more.
As the bronze doors of St. Peter's Basilica opened, so did the 2025 Jubilee of Hope. Pope Francis kicked off the celebration on Christmas Eve with a tradition that dates back centuries. It is the most symbolic of the city's four papal basilicas, which are now all open. An estimated 30 million pilgrims are expected to cross the thresholds this year.
Fratelli e sorelle.
Brothers and sisters, on the Nativity of the Lord, light from light, unquenchable hope, we prepare to cross the holy door with faith. The steps of our journey are the steps of the whole church, pilgrim in the world, and witness of peace.
December 29th was another important milestone. When Cardinal Baldassare Reina, the cardinal vicar for the Diocese of Rome, opened the holy door of St. John Lateran, it formally marked the start of the Jubilee year for dioceses across the world. Falling on the Feast of the Holy Family, the Italian cardinal invited everyone to recognize themselves as a part of God's family. In his prayers, he also called special attention to families facing difficulty and suffering.
The Holy Spirit gathers us in this temple, the mother and head of all churches, to celebrate the Jubilee year of grace and keep alight the torch of hope that doesn't disappoint.
The third holy door at St. Mary Major was opened by the Lithuanian cardinal, Rolandas Makrikas. It is the first Marian shrine in the West. The celebration happened on January 1st on the Solemnity of Mary, Mother of God. The cardinal reflected on the role of Mary as a guiding light for humanity and urged pilgrims to journey in faith under her maternal guidance.
Rivolgiamo al Padre la nostra preghiera.
Let us entrust our prayer to the Father that, like Mary, we may be pilgrims of hope who will bring Christ to the world.
The last holy door is located at St. Paul outside the walls. It was opened by the Basilica's archpriest, Cardinal James Michael Harvey. He emphasized that going through the holy door is to pass through the door of hope and to enter the time of mercy and forgiveness.
Cristo è la porta.
Christ is the door.
and whoever enters the enclosure of the sheepholds through him will be saved. This is our faith, our hope that does not disappoint.
The opening of the Holy Door, Cardinal Harvey continued in his homily, marks the salvific passage opened by Christ through his incarnation, death, and resurrection, calling all members of the Church to be reconciled with God and with one another. Throughout the 2025 Jubilee, pilgrims will be able to journey through all these holy doors, symbolizing the transition that every Christian must make from sin to grace. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.